I'm Gretchen Seely, and it's time for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And this week, we've got Dr. Kia Lewis. She will be your host this evening, and she will have a guest, and she will take you through the paces of the Better Health Radio Show. With that, let me say a special good evening to the good doctor. Good evening, Dr. Lewis.
Hi, good evening, Gregson. How are you?
Yes, please. I'm not too bad, and you look fine yourself. Nice to have you.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to be here. I want, as always, to wish a warm welcome to our listeners here on the Better Health Radio Show, a show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health conditions that affect us all. As usual, we have a very exciting and interactive show ahead for you, and I'm going to take this opportunity to welcome you into the discussion. I want to remind you that if you wish to either give us a comment or a question, please feel free to reach out to us on the phone at 434-1790. Again, that number is 434-1790. If you prefer to message, you're a little bit radio shy, you can WhatsApp your messages to us at 266-4862. Now, it's not every day that you get to sit down and ask questions to an expert doctor for free. So take up the opportunity this evening and call in. Let's hear your questions, your concerns, and your comments. This evening, like I said, we have another exciting show. We are going to be talking about endometriosis. A very interesting topic. Now, this condition affects roughly 10% of reproductive age women and girls globally. And we know it's a chronic disease. It's associated with severe life-impacting pain, among many other symptoms. And the symptoms are so variable and broad that sometimes it makes it difficult to diagnose. And in fact, many individuals who are suffering from this condition have very limited awareness of it. So this evening, we are going to be seeking to raise some more awareness about this condition. And we are privileged to have a household name in Barbados in obstetrics and gynecology. When you hear the name, half of our listeners, I'm sure, will say, "Oh, this person delivered my babies," and the other half will say, "This person delivered me." Dr. Chase, a warm welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis. And warm returns to our listeners, and very good evening to everybody. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So just let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Carlos Chase. He is a consultant in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And of course, he's a private practice consultant at the Mayfield Medical Center. He has been in the field of obstetrics and gynecology for the past 21 years. He is also at present an associate lecturer with the University of the West Indies, Barbados. Now, Dr. Chase would have completed his MBBS in 1988. That's the Bachelor of Medicine and Bachelor of Surgery at the University of the West Indies. And he would have completed his specialty training in obstetrics and gynecology in 1998. Now, throughout his long, illustrious career, he has held a number of positions, including head of department of the obstetric and gynecology at QEH from 2017 to 2013. Then again, from 2017 to 2018, he was also consultant and head of department of ONG at Faith Hospital, Cayman Islands. He's been the medical director of the Barbados Family Planning Association, deputy chairman of the Barbados Medical Council, secretary of the Barbados Association of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the third vice president of the CTUSAB, that's the Congress of Trade Unions and Staff Associations of Barbados, and perhaps my favorite, I might be a little biased, but the president of the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, that's BAMP. And he had a long stint running from 2006 to 2016. In addition to this, our expert guest also served as the international representative for Barbados in obstetrics and gynecology on the well-known internet site www.obgyn.net. And he has published several scientific papers as well. Again, warm welcome to you, Dr. Chase.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis. Words fill me.
So as you can see, we have an expert who's filled with information, and we're looking forward to him sharing with us this evening. So let's get right to it. Dr. Chase, there are a lot of people, both males and females, who might have heard the term endometriosis. There's been a lot of awareness being raised recently. Organizations on the ground doing great work, but we still don't have a full understanding oftentimes of what it really is. So can you tell us, let's start from the ground, what is endometriosis?
Right. So if you, everybody goes on nowadays and goes to Google, you read the medical definition. And this is a common gynecological condition in which endometrial tissues present outside the uterine cavity. If endometrial tissues are inserted in myometrium, it's called adenomyosis. And nobody understands what they're talking about. So put it in layman's term. Think of the woman's womb, the uterus, as a pear, like avocado pear without the seed in it. So it's hollow shaped. And the pear has a green bit and a yellow bit. Yellow bit, think of the yellow bit as what we call the endometrium, the inside lining. That's about 5 millimeters, roughly about thick, about 1/4 inch for those of us in the inches. And the green bit is a lot thicker. So the endometrium, or the yellow bit, will vary in size depending on the woman's cycle. So it'll sort of get thicker throughout the cycle. And then what happens is the body's preparing for a baby. So if the woman gets pregnant, the fertilized egg implants. If this does not occur, then the excess thickening is shed off over the period, 3 to 7 days, or about 5 days. So the blood, the tissue, bits of white cells, and so all that will come out as a menstrual flow over 3 to 5 days. However, it is believed that sometimes, instead of blood coming out through the vagina, it goes back up into the tummy. And then these cells can implant or attach to areas inside the tummy, such as down by the back of the womb, on the ovaries, on the fallopian tubes, and that is termed endometriosis. So that talks about one of the theories of what actually causes it. Retrograde menstruation is the most popular one, but it doesn't explain all the possible causes or presentations. For instance, if you get endometriosis occurring outside the uterine, like in the nostrils, in the lungs, in the rectum, and so forth, it doesn't explain that. So we have many different theories. Suggested to be spread by the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is that system that drains infection, try to fight it in the body. So once you get a cut in the leg, you get what we just call a waxing cut in the thing. That's the lymphatic system working there. So it can be spread by the lymphatic system by the blood. That's one theory. Another theory is derived from stem cells. You have stem cells nowadays. Those cells can form anywhere. Progenitor cells. Lots of theories. Inflammation. But the most popular one is the retrograde menstruation, as I said. As causing what was called endometriosis. So the important thing to remember is that this is non-cancerous condition, it's not contagious, and occurs very commonly in females.
Okay, so we have a mouthful there. But basically we're saying endometriosis is where you get that tissue that's supposed to be in the womb and it's right outside of the womb, right? Yes. And I think what was very interesting for me, a lot of us when we think about endometriosis, we only associate it with the parts that are lower in our body, right? So you would have mentioned the back of the womb, you would have mentioned the fallopian tubes and the ovaries and so forth, but you also mentioned it can grow in some other places.
Yes, nostrils and lungs. So the woman, when she had a period, starts to bleed from her nostrils, or she starts coughing, you find this thing in the lungs, or at the time of the period, blood comes from the bottom as well. So it can, some people have from the navel, that's the implantation as well, where you get bleeding from the navel at the time of the menstrual, or it could be almost anywhere in the body at all.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I bet a lot of our listeners did not know that. You can get bleeding from all of these different sites. So there's some things that we want to know. When it comes to endometriosis, what puts a person, well, let me start by saying, how common is it? How commonly do you see it in practice? What age range is usually most affected?
Usually it's younger females, actually, younger women. I have seen some older females, more mature women as well, but generally speaking, the younger females, we think it's about, the books let's say vary from 10% going up as far as women are affected. I don't have exact figures here, but it's very common in practice now. In fact, not to jump the gun, but the diagnosis has increased now with the increased use of technology and people are more aware of what's going on. Before we used to diagnose other things like PID and all sorts of other things, but now more diagnostic awareness and tools, we can make a better diagnosis. So the incidence has been increasing.
Okay, that makes sense because we have better ways of diagnosing and people know more about it, right?
Yes.
So then my other question would be, what really puts people at risk of developing endometriosis?
Again, a lot of thoughts about it. slim people. This is why it tends to be slim, really, truly hip pushers. Association, low body mass. You
know? The slimmer ladies.
Yeah. Early menarche, that is, when you have started menses early, especially less than 40, I've seen in our generation that the age has been lowering and lowering. Some people early as 8 and then having the menses early. Mm-hmm. And not having babies as well, I think they have increased risks of having endometriosis develop as well. The theory is that the more often you have the period more like this to go the other way and cause problems. So if you start earlier, the risks increase. So that's one way of looking at it that explain why that would be so. And people have early onset menses and don't have babies so often.
Okay. So the other question, we talked about where it occurs, we talked about the risk factors, but we're having this conversation because we know that endometriosis can significantly impact the quality of life of ladies, right? Of women. And so what I would want to talk about now is what are some of the complications that you may occur for somebody who has been diagnosed with endometriosis?
Okay, so it depends on where it is, the extent of the disease, and where it actually infiltrates. So basically what happens is that, as you said, it can be anywhere, the peritoneum, the bowel, the bladder, the tube, the ovaries, the uterosacral ligaments, the rectum, lungs, etc. So the problem is that if the endometriosis are over a nerve, you get what's called deep infiltrating endometriosis, whereas you may not have a lot of disease, but it goes down, affects the nerve. So severe pain is one of the things, especially. And when women have severe pain, there's a problem. It affects their quality of life throughout their lifestyle. So from school, work, relationships, and then you find that you have a problem, even when you come to the doctor or the clinic, because pain is one thing we really cannot say the patient is not having. We cannot measure it. We can say if you're scrolling like, yes, like they have pain, but the intensity of pain, no one can say except for you. Yes, some people have a high pain tolerance, some people have a low pain threshold. This is true. But someone's having pain, we can't say they're not having pain.
Absolutely.
So the problem comes then that they have severe pain and then they're not believed. So you take a painkillers, or they're not working. They send the person to psychiatrist. You're always off on work, so you get fired from work. You're not going to school, you're malingering. You come to a doctor, you want to have medication, pain not working. And there's a whole cycle that goes on that line with the severe pain going for. So apart from pain, which is the major thing, you can get complications such as cyst formation. So the endometriosis, as I said, can be on the outside, maybe by the ovary, you get bleeding, you get what's called a cyst, which is basically, think of it like a balloon full of water, but in this case, it's not water, it's actually old blood and initial tissue, and that is extremely painful. That can burst, that can cause problems of spreading tummy as well. You can get problems with attaching to the bowel, so you first present irritable bowel syndrome, diarrhea, back pain. The pain can be so severe that some people actually get admitted to the psych ward because you can't find anything wrong, they examine, there's nothing wrong. And that's what is the complications of infertility also is one that also arises in that the scarring from the disease process scars the ovaries, the tubes, and stops a person from getting pregnant. So that's another problem going forward. Relationships suffer because pain is so severe. You're always in pain. In the course, the pain is severe. You jump off the bed. Then for 2-3 days after, severe pain. Then pain says, oh, the period comes, there's more pain, so you're constantly in pain. And that can be very, very debilitating for the person. It plays on their relationships, on their mind, on the interaction with other people. Even the doctors may not believe them going forward.
Yeah, and Dr. Chase, that's something. There are two things that you raised that I wanted to delve into a little bit more. We talked about the issue of infertility. Because we do know that because of where the deposits, and like you said, you can get a lot of scar tissue inside and around the womb, that it's difficult for women to have babies, yeah?
Yes.
And so this is a major issue for young women. I wonder if you could delve into that a little bit more for us. How common is it, for example, to have issues with infertility in endometriosis?
Well, the quota figures are 23% of women with endometriosis end up having problems with getting pregnant. So it's pretty serious, actually. Mm-hmm. As I said, the problems can relate to one, damage to the ovary, damage to the tube. And if you get damage to the tube, unless you have either in vitro fertilization or tube implantation, if the tube is not supposed to be damaged, then definitely almost every like 10 of the tubes really will not get pregnant. Then there's adhesion formation, where they have like things like little threads form around the tube, prevent the egg from coming out. There's no ovulation, therefore the egg can't meet the sperm, you cannot get pregnant again. They get destruction, for instance, the endometrioma, where the endometrious tissue bleeds and destroys ovarian tissue. So it's not normal ovarian tissue. So there's no ovary there to generate the egg, so you can't get pregnant as well. So that is a very serious and potentially debilitating condition. When endometrious is so bad, it damages the tube and the ovaries, the person can't get pregnant. Then the recourse would be if the ovaries are not damaged so severely, to take the egg, fertilize it, and put it inside the uterus, what's called in vitro fertilization.
In vitro. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it's damaged beyond repair, then you have to think about other things, adoption, surrogate, other complicated things to get pregnant going forward.
Yeah, so this can be a very serious condition for young women.
Yes.
And then the other thing that we talked about was how it affects a woman's sex life. And I know for women, sometimes to talk about sex, even if their doctors, seem so taboo. Men are more open. If they have a problem, they're coming straight to you saying, "Doc, I got a problem, fix it. You know, if it can cost me my life, fix it." You know, that's how the men are. But the women, you actually have to bring it up with them sometimes to encourage them to talk about the challenges they're having. And like you said, it can cause significant relationship issues because of the pain associated. And so I just want to, you know, to raise awareness of that with our listeners, especially our male listeners. So our female listeners, we sympathize, we empathize with you, and our male listeners, we hope that you understand the struggles that a woman with endometriosis might have. Dr. Chase, how can a woman who is experiencing pain as a result of sexual intercourse, what are some tips that she might be able to use to cope, even within the relationship or even discussing it with a partner?
Well, I smile when you talk about the men coming here. Yes, the men do bring the women. Listen, doc, fix it. There's a problem here. So you're quite right.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Right. So the pain for intercourse. So, okay, the endometriosis deposits in the bottom of the pelvis. There's a ligament, think of it like that connects the back of the cervix to the pelvis called the sacrum, the uterus sacral ligament, and is almost on the bottom of the floor of the pelvis when the woman's standing. So the deposits run along there, and that's at the back. So in the vagina, that'll be at the back of the vagina. So you find that sometimes in certain positions, you get excruciating pain, mm-hmm. especially on the back in the Bayesian bait fold position. This allows very deep penetration, mm-hmm. jumps off the bed, that's severe pain, really. So you have to change the position then.
So that's a great tip. You can work on your sexual positions in order to see what works for you.
Correct. On the side, back, or on top, going on top of control, penetration, and the location, so you get that sort of pain. So that's one thing. The other thing, of course, would be to try to diagnose and get the problem sorted out if you can, or painkillers before if it's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be extremely painful. So some actually have to stop and end up in tears. And it can be really, really bad for the woman. And then it does cause strain in a relationship. What typically happens, men are very concerned and supportive. But after a couple of months, as men, of course, they lose interest and move on. And that's our facts, really and true. So it can be really devastating on the relationship if you can't then just get it sorted at early o'clock. And to treat it can be very frustrating for the doctor as well.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about treatment soon, but I just wanted to mention some of the other symptoms too, because sometimes people get heavy or irregular bleeding, right? We talked about the symptoms in terms of stooling, so you can get cycles of diarrhea and constipation, and also pain when you're passing water or passing water very often. Is that right, Dr. Chase?
All right, you are correct. Yes, I mentioned pain because that's the most, I said, that's the one people complain about the most, but you're quite right. those other things are also can also occur, and they can be equally as devastating and debilitating. Pain and urination, I think, getting through for urinary tract infections, but it's not really urinary tract, antibiotics all the time, or pain from the bottom gut examination, rectal examination, count for anything, constipation, irritation, the bowel, getting endoscopy and colonoscopy, finding irritable bowel syndrome, but not really that. So it can be very, very distressing going from doctor to doctor, having these sort of problems, and people not believing you that you're having this sort of pain. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Trying to figure it out, the wide range of symptoms, like you said. I want to remind our callers, our listeners at this point, that you can call us, ask any questions, leave any comments at 434-1790. And if you want to WhatsApp us, you can send your messages to 266-4862. Now, Dr. Chase, with the wide range of symptoms that we just talked about, it's no wonder that it can be difficult to diagnose endometriosis. So my question to you then would be, how is it really diagnosed?
Right. So the gold standard is to do what's called a laparoscopy. Basically, this is to put a camera inside the tummy through a smaller hole and look inside and see it. You can also biopsy the lesion and get histology, but that's not absolutely necessary for diagnosis. You can look. And when you look at to the laparoscope, they have different appearances of the endometrial deposits, depending on how severe it is and what this can be. Red deposits, white, dark, black. And after a while, and with training, you can recognize the different stages and different types, and you can actually stage it as well at laparoscopy to see exactly what's going on. Now, the problem was that in the past, because people are not well trained, a lot of the diagnosis were actually missed because they're not recognized as endometriosis. Mm-hmm. But now we've actually taken upon that and set standards and protocols because now diagnosis are a lot better going forward.
That's good news for CT us ladies.
Ultrasound and CT, people know about ultrasound and CT, but generally speaking, unless it's really, to use for lack of a better term, bad or severe, you won't see any much on ultrasound unless you have adhesions or endometriosis deposits to see something similar for CT as well. As you have big entry wounds or a big sister, you won't necessarily see anything. So there's something called presumptive diagnosis as well. Mm-hmm. So in other words, patient comes in, she has all the symptoms, you're not sure. You say, okay, look, let's treat you as if you have endometriosis. And if we respond to treatment, we presume that that's why it is. So you give the patient a course of treatment and say, yes, I'm a lot better now. You say, oh, okay. Well, therefore, is endometriosis. But to know for sure, you have to do what's called laparoscopy, look in the tummy and see what's going on.
That's the gold standard laparoscopy.
Yes.
So, and
differential diagnosis. Oh, sorry to interrupt that. Yeah.
No, sorry. We have a caller on the line. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to take a short break to let our caller enter the conversation. Good evening, caller, and welcome.
Hi, good night. I just want to ask one question because I was listening to y'all and it seemed very interesting. What I want to know, you know, sometimes you will hear a lot of women talking about the getting yeast infections. What I want to know, does endometriosis help with that as well as in the cause of having these yeast infections that will not go away sometimes and just, you know? So I just want to know if endometriosis would cause people to get yeast infections like that. And I will put down and listen to y'all answer.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Dr. Chase.
No, recurrent yeast infections are a different kettle of fish, really and truly. That's a whole another program to discuss about recurrent infection, vaginitis, and so on. Generally, yeast infections are a local infection, and the yeast or candida, or what you call it, is normally present in the body, and it will tend to overgrow when the conditions are right. And usually, the hormones that won't produce the estrogen has also creates a bacteria or encourages a bacteria called lactobacillus that produces an acid and keeps the vagina acidic. That way, it keeps in check any sort of bacteria, fungus, and so on. So, generally speaking, unless there's an imbalance, you wouldn't get an infection. So it can stop the right to get this infection. Imbalance your hormone, you use the antibiotic, you're diabetic, resistance is low, something have to change to get the yeast infection there. But in the mixture itself, that would not cause that.
Okay. would not harm.
Jesus came, yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much for that, Dr. Chase. But you were telling us about what you call differential diagnosis. So
yes,
something okay. that looks like endometriosis but might not be endometriosis. What might it be?
Right. So problems with getting pain, all that could also be other things such as what we call chronic sarpingitis or pelvic inflammatory disease or PID. In other words, we have an infection in the tummy. So in the past, a lot of patients were diagnosed as PID before the advent of laparoscopy to confirm or understand what's going on because it's so similar. You can get PID, can also take irritable bowel syndrome as well. Sometimes the bowel presents similarly. So there's a lot of confusion as with this condition. And I got lumped into the category of chronic pelvic pain. So chronic pelvic pain, differential diagnosis, PID, endometriosis, irritable bowel syndrome was a standard thing. Do all your investigations, da, da, da. But now we can actually look and say, look, this is what it is, and go forward.
Dr. Chase, we talk about laparoscopy, and for you and I who are doctors, that's clear in our mind what it is. But what is that procedure really like for the patient? Are they sleeping? Are they awake? Is it done in the office? Is it done in the operating theater? What does that look like for the patient?
Right. So laparoscopy is basically day surgery as a short procedure, about 20 minutes usually. And it's usually done in the operating theater. You're asleep for it. Although there have been cases where we can do what's called awake laparoscopy in certain cases. But for the most case times, you normally put the patient to sleep. You make a small little cut just under the navel and put some air in the tummy. Usually it's carbon dioxide you use to inflate the tummy. Carbon dioxide is non-toxic, so there's no problem with the tummy there. They make a little cut just above the top of the tummy by the symphysis, what we call the symphysis pubis there, by the pubic hair. You put a camera, right? You put a probe in, you put a camera by the navel and look inside through the camera and see exactly what's going on. And the camera's connected to the screen and you can see the uterus, can see the ovaries, see the bowel, can see all the tummy, and you can diagnose what's wrong with the patient. And so it takes about 20 minutes, you go home the same day, and quite short.
What's the recovery like? Anything to be worried about?
Well, you can go back to work, depending on what job you're doing, you should go back to work for 20 or 40 hours, actually. Most people should be back to work for about 2 days. Some people take a little long, as again, people have different response to the procedure, maybe take a week or so, but it's supposed to be day surgery back to work for 40 hours or so.
Fantastic. And I thought it was important to allow persons to know what that looks like because sometimes people don't seek help because they're afraid, right? And they think about laparoscopy, they may think this is a major surgery, you know, they're going to leave a big scar from one side of my hip to the other. And I don't know if it is worth it, but as you can see, it's a relatively simple procedure. Nobody's trying to tie your fallopian tubes together. They're just going to take a nick and take a look, all right?
I like that, nick and look.
Yes, so we would have discussed looking in and what I want to ask you about, because you mentioned it briefly about the stages of endometriosis, because there's a wide spectrum, so you can have it from mild all the way to severe cases. What are the stages of endometriosis?
Well, simply put, they have many different classifications. I think the most common one is got stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, minimal, mild, moderate, and severe, basically. And it depends on the degree of involvement of the tubes and the other organs with the endometriosis. So if you have endometriosis on your bladder, stuck down on tubes all over, big endometriomas, or big cysts, and so that's stage 4. You have one or two little spots, stage 2, and just in between, you just grade it. There's a scale that comes with a scoring system that does can just tick off and it would grade slotting and you just work out which stage you're at. Mm-hmm. So then we want to treat, but they have other stages as well because the other societies say that really that does not really reflect patients with infertility problems and people with deep infertility. You just have different methods of classification, but this is the most common one in use.
Okay, great. So we've brought the patient in, we've had a discussion, this might be endometriosis, we've done our nick and look, and we've given them a stage. The question then is, how do I treat this patient? So what are the treatment options when we're talking about endometriosis for patients with this condition?
So treatment depends on several factors. One, the age of the patient, our plans as far as fertility, her plans as far as where she wants to have medical or surgical treatment, which is her expected management. So there's a whole discussion with the patient. So the options would be one, do nothing, which is her expected management. It sounds bad, but if the patient has mild symptoms or diagnosed as mild endometriosis and doesn't want, a lot of people don't want to have drugs nowadays and so forth, it is reasonable to watch and just see what happens if she's not having any severe problems. And get smarter and just review and see what happens after that. Other than that, the options would be medical and surgical. And we chose the estrogen-dependent disease. So treatment would have to be hormone-based for the endometriosis itself, and they can treat the symptoms. The symptoms would obviously be pink, well, not obvious, would be painkillers as part of treatment going forward. And then the medical might not work, surgery would be the option. Surgery then depends again on the extent and what's happening with the woman. Clearly, you want to do a hysterectomy with someone who's pregnant, has mild disease, but someone who's perhaps completes a family, having severe pain, massive endometriomas, lots of adhesions and deposits, that might be an option. However, a hysterectomy may not cure the pain if it's for pain, because the pain is caused by the invading the nerves. So a lot of women come and think, have I hysterectomy, therefore get rid of pain. Tell them, no, that would not cause pain. They get upset and go to a different doctor to hear the same thing, you know? So it depends on what's happening with the pain, what the symptoms are, what's going on to determine what treatment would be. So you have drugs. If you have just mild pain, maybe what we call a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, a big word, things like Advil, right? Which is non-steroidal. Or use the combined oral contraceptive pill if a person doesn't want to get pregnant as a continuous basis. They have what we call progestogens, which are progesterone-only base. Then we have androgens, things that are testosterone-type base. Then they have the what we call a GnRH agonist, the trophin-releasing hormone agonist and the antagonist. Newer things called the aromatase inhibitors, as other drugs as well. Then people try the Mirena IUCD as well as an option. Then we have surgery. Surgery can be just be the excise or ablate. Ablate means to basically burn off the lesions. I can do this either laparoscopically or open, laser or classic what we call electrosurgical unit, which is like a dietary machine. Or we can excise using robotic surgery as the top of the line stuff really.
Robotic surgery.
Yes. It's only limited by your pocketbook.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It's also the other thing. It's also like a special subset of people, you know, get to do surgery with the robot.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. There are special centers in the US. That's all they do. Stage 3 and 4 endometriosis, robotic surgery, so 6-8 hours just exercising it. Yeah.
And when we say exciting, just for everybody to understand, this is where we are cutting away these deposits.
Yes,
right? We're removing all the deposits we can see. And yes, we talked about the surgical options. We said, you know, laparoscopic or open, big words again, but you can have the key, what people call the keyhole surgery. So, you know, where you make a little keyhole, nip and look like we talked about, but this time you're actually doing things. And then you can have the open, like you said, Dr. Chase. Right?
Yes.
So, And we talked about a number of medical treatments as well.
Yes.
So, you can continue.
So what's available here? I guess we want, here's all what is available here. Yes. The NSAIDs are available here. The combined oral contraceptive pills are available here. The progestogens are available. Androgens are available. And the GnRH and agonists are available. I'm not aware of the antagonists and the newer ones, aromatase inhibitors, being available here as a thing, but we get a very good response with the other things. So some of the drugs are, we tried with the painkillers, as I said, the ibuprofen, the Voltaren, those other things. And then the pills, progestins, like norethisterone, Naritone, a lot of people know about these other things, Depo-Provera, Danazol. A lot of people don't like Danazol, but it works very well because of the side effects. And when it said effects, is of course the androgens, because of the testosterone base, you get deep voice and facial hair. So
no.
See,
they go from one problem to the other.
The GnRH agonists, things like Zolex and Lupron, we have that here as well. Those are injectable, so just injections. And depending on which one you choose, it's either in the tummy or it can be in the muscle of the arm once a month or every 3 months, depending on the dosage. The course is just 6 months, and it can repeat it up to twice. And you get a good response with that as well.
Right. So I want our listeners to understand, we're talking a lot of big words. But what it really is that you're either treating the pain of the endometriosis with painkillers, or you're using hormones, because remember we said endometriosis is a hormonal issue. So you're using a hormonal method to help to treat the endometriosis.
Yes. Yeah?
I think two things that they may have understood is the oral contraceptive pill, the pill that women take to stop them from getting pregnant.
Yes.
I don't know how many people know that that can be used to treat endometriosis, but it can. And then another big one that I like to, not necessarily for endometriosis, but pretty much anything else, Myrina. The Myrina that you would have mentioned, Dr. Chase.
Yes.
Yes. And that's an insert. Can you tell us a little bit more about that one?
That's a plastic contraceptive device that's usually inserted into the womb to prevent pregnancy, but it also has a hormone in it. And the hormone is a progesterone-based hormone. And that's the benefit of using that one. It's an option to consider as well. And the last 5 to 7 years, the Myrina insert.
Yeah.
There was a trial with it. It was not as good as some of the others, but it is an option to consider. Yes.
It's an option to consider.
Yes.
So then the other question, because you talked about you did a trial, it wasn't as good. What are the pros and cons of, for example, surgery versus your medical treatment? So you can tell me what are the pros and cons of surgery, for example, and then you can talk about the medications.
Okay. Well, I guess I better talk about laser because that sounds nice and Star Trek-y. So let's start with talking about stuff. Right. So when I was training, there was a thing called Luna. They call laparoscopic. Oh, the nerve ablation.
Luna, okay.
And this was used to treat endometriosis. They found that really and truly, it only worked in what we call central endometriosis. People have pain in central regions, really. Wasn't so good. And then they got laser electrosurgical treatment. Again, when I was training, laser was the way to go. I used to go in and burn off all this with laser. And then they realized that, the electrosurgical or the diatomy unit has similar success rate. So with these things, about 63% success rate, and the patients may get a recurrence at about 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
73% when you have the ablations with the either laser or the electrosurgical unit.
So if they have a recurrence, do they have to go back to surgery? What happens then?
Agreed. You have to either go back to surgery or use medical treatment
to manage it.
Yes.
Okay. That's important to know to help you to make a decision.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the problem with the laparoscopic approach, I need to have a really highly skilled surgeon to do these procedures. That's where robotic surgery comes in.
Mm-hmm.
With robotic surgery, it's not really robot operating on you. What happens is it's really laparoscopic surgery, but instead of you manipulating the probe there with your hand, you use a computer to manipulate it. So it means you can use minute movements. And you can very precise movements and precise cuts. So you can really, you can move it like 1 millimeter, 2 millimeter, that sort of thing. So you can really get all the deposits quite nicely. However, it takes a long time. I have to be well trained to do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the pros and cons of medical treatment then. So we talked about the side effects of one of the medications, but what might be some of the benefits and the disadvantages of going the medical route? Just taking medications.
Right. So the medication, if you look at the let's start with the simple ones, the non-steroidal ones, the problem is the stomach. Because they're ibuprofen, those sort of things, they can affect the stomach, cause gastritis, ulceration. So if you think of the food, if they put on weight going forward. The combined oral concept pills are pills again. It's taken continuously before the break, so there's no period. So depending on which one you take, you can have problems again with weight gain. Not all of them do, but you can. You have to choose one that doesn't cause a problem with that. The oral progestogens, the norethisterone and the side effects, increase appetite and weight gain. It is possible to not put on weight with them if you watch what you eat and exercise, but because they make you hungry, they tend to be snacking, and then you put on weight. You mentioned the problems with the androgens, whatever, the facial hair and so on. The GnRH agonists, the Zolex and Lupron, they are anti-estrogen, so they lower the estrogen level. So one goes to instant menopause, you get hot flashes, mood swings, irritability. So in those cases, you do what's called ADAPT therapy. You give a small dose of estrogens to counteract those effects. They may also, over a long period of time, affect the bone density, so we watch that as well. And you may also have to watch the liver function test. Some patients get increased or liver enzyme changes with the medications. So you have to be aware of that.
The liver.
Yes. Again, not everybody gets it, but the things that can happen. They work.
All right. So it's you know, you always want patients to know these are the benefits of doing this line of treatment, and these are the possible complications, the issues that you can have. And what I like to say to patients is that because there's so many options, you don't have to suffer in silence if you're having a particular issue with a medication or a mode of treatment. A lot of times the patients just stop taking them, Dr. Chase.
That is true.
Yeah, they just, they get frustrated and they say, well, these pills are making me worse than the sickness itself. And I just like to advocate to patients, have a conversation with the doctor. There's so many options. Say, you know, doctor, who so-and-so, this is not working for me. Is there something else that I can perhaps use, you know, to help with this problem without all of the side effects? So I just want to put that out there. Don't stop taking your medication. Have a conversation with your doctor. Yeah, that's for anything at all.
Agreed. And not everybody has the side effects. Because you have side effects, patients go on Dr. Google and read the side effects. All of a sudden, start having all the side effects.
Yes.
Not everybody gets all the side effects. Some people do, some people don't. It's like most things. Depends on your body.
Yeah, Dr. Google is both our friend and our enemy. Depends on how we consult him or her. We're not really sure at this point. So what I want to ask you then, because endometriosis is really mediated or controlled by our hormones, does menopause have any effect on endo?
Generally speaking, once you stop issues yourself, the endometriosis should get better. Mm-hmm. So patients usually, if they have endometriosis and go menopause, so the pain should stop. However, if they have endometriomas, in other words, masses or cysts, those would still be there until they are absorbed in the body or you remove them surgically. But generally speaking, the process itself should stop once you go to the menopause.
Okay. And then speaking of menopause, we know that sometimes when women go through menopause, they have a very rough time. Dr. Chase, we women have it really rough. We have it really rough.
But the men are on pause, they may have it worse.
I don't know who has it worse. I guess both people have it rough. And sometimes you really need help going through this menopause thing, huh? You know, doctors were at that time prescribe what we call hormone replacement therapy. So the estrogen has dropped. We're having all the problems because there's less estrogen. When so the doctor says, you know what, let me give you back some hormones so that it's not too difficult and you and the mister can survive it, you know?
Yes.
Does that have an impact on endometriosis?
Yes. If you're taking estrogens, right?
Yeah. So if you're getting HRT, hormone replacement therapy, after yes, menopause, can it cause the endometriosis to worsen if it has settled down?
It can, but it depends on the dose you're taking the root. If you're taking such as through the skin patch, it's a very small dose, so it shouldn't be a major problem. If they're oral, maybe better have a look and see what happens and what works for you. Because it can change if necessary to reduce the dose to make sure the minimum that will relieve the symptoms before causing flare. So it's sort of a delicate balance.
Right.
Yes, it can, yes.
Yeah. So for our older ladies, you just have to remember it is all a delicate balance. You can use lower doses. You don't have to suffer with all the issues related to menopause. You can get help just at a dose that works for you. I want to remind our callers, we really want to hear from you. You really make our evening. Can you call us, reach out to us at 434-1790-266. 4862 is the WhatsApp number. Again, if you want to call, 434-1790, WhatsApp 266-4862. For those of you who have joined us before, after we would have introduced the topic, we are talking all about endometriosis with our special guest, Dr. Chase. So feel free to call in, give us your comments and your questions. Dr. Chase, I had a question about whether the symptoms can go away on their own without treatment. But you did mention the watch and wait approach, because some people are like, you know, I just want to see if it, you know, if it settles on its own.
Dr. Lewis, before you move on to Dr. Chase, there's a WhatsApper who has waiting here for a response for quite a while. So it's just a simple question, though. They're saying, good evening. I appreciate this discussion on endometriosis. I look forward to a discussion on adenomyosis, which I find is not often talked about. So your response to that, Doc?
I'll volunteer to do a program on adenomyosis if the host thinks...
If invited?
Dr. Chase, I think that this is a good time maybe just to give us a little bit about it. You know, I'm sure that the caller and a couple of other people that are now curious is saying, adenomyosis, there's something else. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Right. So, in our definition, we opened, we said that endometriosis was basically the lining inside the womb on the outside. If the inside lining is actually in the womb, in the muscle of the womb itself, it's called adenomyosis. So, if you remember the pear had the inside lining was yellow and the outside was a thicker green. If you put the yellow inside the green, that is called adenomyosis. Mm-hmm. And that can just be bulky. It can present as fibroids and present heavy periods, painful periods. It actually mimics periods. It mimics fibroids. And the management can be very difficult if it's not recognized. Patient has severe pain, heavy periods, lots of pads, big uterus, good operate, no fibroids. Just a thickened, bulky uterus, adenomyosis. Or if you do ultrasound scan, you don't see any fibroids, just the uterus is just enlarged. And you can see specific changes on this ultrasound that show it's actually adenomyosis instead of fibroids causing the problem. The treatment will be then depend again on the woman, how old she is, fertility plans, etc. But generally aim at controlling the symptoms and control the bleeding. So with painkillers and medication reduce the bleeding. If she does not want to get pregnant and she's debilitated with it and she's at the end of her fertility life, then you could consider hysterectomy as a last option.
Okay, fantastic. So you know this is the holidays, it's Christmas, and we like a lot of specials. So you just got a 2-for-1 special. You got a program about endometriosis. So we threw in a little summary about adenomyosis. And hopefully, like you said, Dr. Chase, we can have a proper program on that because, like you said, we don't talk about it a whole lot. Gregson, do we have any other calls or WhatsApp messages?
No, we are, the board is clear. Okay. Well, hold on. Okay. As you that, I see a light blinking. Let's find out how we can help this person. Very good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yes, good evening.
Yes, please.
Does diet have anything to do with endo? What are you talking about this evening?
Doc.
Endometriosis.
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. That's an excellent question, actually, yes. So, remember I said that the endometriosis actually responds to estrogens. So if you're taking foods of estrogens, that can worsen your endometriosis and worsen your symptoms. So a lot of plant-based and natural foods have estrogens. So patients take them and then find that things don't get worse or take it unknowingly. So the first one is soy. Pure soy products are estrogen-based. Soy milk, tofu, almonds, having soy. And that will cause your endometriosis to worsen and cause your condition not to improve. Other than that, some foods tend to affect us as well. Patients notice that when they cut out red meat, beef, lamb, it seems to reduce the problem with endometriosis. So eat more fish. Exercise usually always helps everything. and natural based stuff, even Primrose oil and plant based estrogens, that also aggravates endometriosis because they have estrogens as well. So that's a very good question. Your diet, yes, can affect and play a part of it. If you eat things that have progesterone, they would tend to help the endometriosis. I remember yam as one of the things that nobody eats nowadays, and progesterone that would tend to help with the with the endometriosis. There's another food, but it slips me right now. That's very common that could help as well. But I remember yam for sure. That's what happened.
All right. So you can have some farmers sold out to yam. Right. So young people, especially, like, I can't think of y'all, but the young people, we want you to get out there and get you some yam. And I think that, you know, that's important. Like, soil changes are important for anything at all health-wise. We have another caller.
Yes, please. Very good evening.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I am not too bad, Mr. Hope. How are you doing?
Not as good as you, but good evening to the excellent doctors.
Yes, they're waiting on your query.
Question or query are or is, would endometriosis be affected by minerals and some ions, like, for instance, potassium, sodium, magnesium, and calcium? And in particular for the ions, the chlorine ions, would that affect in a negative or positive way? Well, those, pardon me.
Oh, dear, clean bone me, though. I have to go look that one up. I'm clean bone. Don't know. Sorry, I have to look that one up.
Pardon All right, me? So I actually thought it was a very interesting question.
No, they said that the doctor replied that you clean bowled him and you'd have to return with a response.
Oh, I don't think so. I think he can figure that out in 6 seconds.
I hear you, Mr.
From what I am hearing, he's that. Anyhow, thanks a million. It's more than very interesting. Thank you.
Wonderful. You take care of yourself, Mr. Hope.
You too, sir, and to the goodly doctors.
Wonderful. Take care. All right, Dr. Lewis, go ahead, please.
Dr. Chase, they have very high confidence in you in 6 seconds to say. Record of 6 seconds. Yeah. But that was a very good question. And, you know, we talk about lifestyle. Everybody wants to know about, you know, non-conventional ways of doing things. They don't want to go on medication. What are some of the things I can eat or I should avoid? And, like, we talked about exercise. Now, it's one of the things that people worry about anytime you talk about a condition involving growth in the body is cancer. We know that endometriosis is not a cancer, but is there any link to cancer? For example, does it increase or decrease a woman's risk of developing cancers?
Right. So endometriosis itself is not cancer, but yes, it's been in association with other cancers going forward. The main ones would be ovarian cancer, mm-hmm. and hematological cancers. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember exactly which one it was. That is an association. It doesn't mean they have cancer themselves. It's just the risks increase with the patient.
If you have endometriosis.
Yeah. No, Hodgkin's lymphoma is one of the things that there as well, and brain tumors, but it's all rare, less than 1%.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry that you're going to have getting ovarian cancer and that sort of thing. This is a less than 1% risk. And if you look at a woman's relationship, if you have ovarian cancer, even in the absence of endometriosis, it's still less than 1% brain injury. So it's not a big thing, just a fun association that women who tend to have ovarian cancer sort of risks associated with it.
Okay, well, like we said, a pretty low risk.
Low risk, yes.
We've talked about, you know, a lot of medical issues, and sometimes as doctors, we might not always in the moment in the office with a full waiting room outside recognize the social implications. You were very good at mentioning a lot of those, how it affects relationships and all that. But I wonder, what are some of the things, if a patient has endometriosis, what are some of the things within the family, whether it's within the marriage or just within the general family, what are some of the ways that we can lend support to ladies who are dealing with this particular struggle within the home?
I think first is to believe them, actually. And after a while, I think the pain can be that bad, you know. You can't be having pain all the time like this. You can't, nothing doesn't work. I mean, nothing ever. Something must work. There's always that doubt going forward that maybe the person is not having the severe pain. Maybe the thing is not working. Maybe they're living. I think just we want support to believe that, yes, they are having this pain. It is really bad. They do need help in truth, really. So we should not doubt them. I think believing them and supporting is a prime thing we can do, really. Yes, believe that they are having pain and support them when they come to get help or ask to get help.
Those are some great tips, Dr. Chase. Yes. We're just going to break very quickly. We're soon wrapping up, but we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome.
Hello.
Good night.
Yes, please. Just turn your radio down just a wee bit because we can hear it coming back at us. And then when you've done that, proceed with your question to the good doctor, please.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Is this a condition that is hereditary? It runs in families.
Excellent question, Dr. Chase.
One theory was it can be quote-unquote, could be because of stem cells, degeneration, inflammatory also. Nobody knows. It could be. They can't say for sure. It could be. But not certain things do run in families, and fibroids, polycystic ovaries. So whether endometriosis, I have an open mind to it. I wouldn't say no for sure. I says it could be.
Okay. All right. I think that's a reasonable answer. And Dr. Chase, I guess my final thing in wrapping up, we talked about support within the home, but again, women do not only stay at home, they have to go to school and they have to go to work. What can persons within the workplace, whether it is management, whether it is, you know, a colleague, what can we do within the workplace to support women who might be dealing with endometriosis?
I think be understanding and not be too judgmental. In other words, don't assume that they are doing it for doing it's sake and they are doing it because they want attention, not doing it because they have nothing better to do, doing it because they're trying to put you out your way.
Or because they want time off.
Want time off.
That's a common accusation.
Yeah. We have some patients who have severe pain. I know they ask me, but sometimes when the pain is so severe and nothing works, you have to look at other things like nerve blocks, THC, cannabis, and so on to try to help them with the pain management specialists and so on. It can be really, really hard to treat and it can be really difficult for them when you get this extreme pain that responds to nothing. People have surgery, have also, I think, all the drugs and nothing works. Severe pain, they lot must be, oh, they're drug addicts. They only want to come and get the fix and so forth. Mm-hmm. They want time off. They want, they need to be supportive. I think there's a group here, a local group, the endometriosis group that's formed coming out of this. I think they have a good group to get in contact with to help them
make people
aware of what's going on. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Chase, do you have any parting words for our listeners this evening?
Yes. Endometriosis is real. There's help available. There are options available. Just ask for help. Come in, ask for options, and don't think you're alone. We believe you, and we're here to help.
All right. Fantastic parting words. I want to thank you, Dr. Chase, for taking your time out. You were supposed to be with us last week, but you had an emergency. And as any good doctor, when it comes to, you know, your professional responsibilities, the patients come first. So thank you for making the sacrifice to be with us, share your expertise, share your sense of humor and your heart for patients and medicine with us this evening. We are very grateful. It would be remiss of me to end this show without sending a special shout out to the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and PCOS. They have been doing fantastic work on the ground. Dr. Rashida Daisy comes to mind. They have been advocating, informing, supporting. And so we want to say a special thank you to that organization for the work that they have been doing. And they also want to let you know that if you do need support, you can reach them via WhatsApp at 262-2122. Again, that is 262-2122. the Barbados Association of Endometriosis, and PCOS. Again, I want to thank you, listeners, those of you who were just, you know, casually listening and learning, those of you who would have called or sent your WhatsApp messages. We know that this show is not the same without you. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And again, we thank Starcom Network for allowing us, the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, to continue this public awareness program. I want to wish you a wonderful night. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right. Thank you so much. That's Dr. Kia Lewis, your host this evening for the Better Health Radio Show. And she had as her guest on this occasion, Dr. Carlos Chase. And he promised to be back if invited to expand on, expand on other matters. Thank you both. And you have a wonderful evening. And we'll see you around in the near future. Thank you kindly and have a good evening. All right.
Have a good evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.